Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Massive thanks to Jeff Nomina for stepping up on the last podcast and filling in for me. I had an unexpected emergency come up, and he filled in beautifully. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how are you doing today?
Jeff really might be a better co-host than either of us, and we need to acknowledge that. But thank you very much to Jeff for coming on. But we got a great guest on, so let's get right to it.
We do have a great guest on. I could not be more excited. Joining us today is Director of Player Development and Assistant Coach for the Cleveland Cavaliers, Mike Garrity. Mike, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. Excited to be here with you guys.
We're really excited to have you. And funny enough, your name is actually one that's come up on this podcast a couple times. A good buddy of ours, Dave Dufour, has been singing your praises on this podcast. Dave Dufour of The Athletic has been singing your praises on and off the podcast to us for years. When Cavs drafted Colin Sexton, his whole thing was, hey, this is a real hard worker. You got great player development people in place. This is going to work out. This is going to be a great thing. But when I mentioned to Dave that we were having you on the podcast today, he said we absolutely have to start by asking you what your story was and how you got here, because he insisted it is incredibly interesting, and I am dying to find out.
Well, I appreciate those compliments. That's very kind of him, and I really enjoy the show that you guys do. So it's a pleasure to be on, but I guess I can give you guys a little background of how I got here. Interesting story, actually, once I kind of get along into it. But, I played growing up, played Division I basketball, ended up graduating from USC and playing there. And then I went on for a two-year professional career in the D-League, played in three different cities, played in Erie, Maine, as well as Dakota, North Dakota. And so played 2 years of professionally, and then I ended up starting my own player development program, training program back in Southern California. And you know what? I happened to be at the right place at the right time. And I was actually training Mike Brown's son at the time. And Mike was the one who brought me into the NBA. But I was at a gym. He saw me working. He grabbed my information from the parents of the kids I was training. And next thing you know, I took over for his son training for a year, and then he brought me along to Cleveland, and here we are. Now we're 8 years later. Never really could have dreamed of it. NBA wasn't necessarily something that was on the radar back then. I was enjoying where I was at and enjoying developing and influencing kids. And then opportunity of a lifetime came along, and it's been a dream come true. And I've had a blast, and I started in the film room and was an assistant player development coach for 5 years, and then took over as director of player development and assistant coach after year five, and done that for the last 3 years, and coming up on my fourth.
How was the film room experience? Everyone kind of says it's pretty grueling. It's just a ton of hours, ton of work. Like how much of it were you kind of like heads down versus like were you like trying to sneak in opportunities to do development on the side? Like what was that experience like?
Well, what was interesting is Coach Brown, talked to me when I first got there. And one of the things he said was, hey, when that ball is bouncing, you're out on the floor and you're out there working with the guys and, you know, find a way to get your film work done as well. So it was one of those things where I came in as a assistant video coordinator by title. But there was no denying that assistant player development was just as much as a part of my my daily work. And so that experience, though, was incredible. And I tell everybody who comes into the NBA, you know, I was coming from training and I enjoyed the player development and probably wanted to jump right into it. But I wouldn't have traded all the long nights, late nights, early mornings, you know, breaking down all the games, because it only made me a better development coach. It only made me a better coach. And I think it really lays a foundation for coaches coming into the NBA of, the NBA game and understanding it and seeing how you can kind of apply it from a development standpoint, also to a coaching standpoint.
With Mike Brown being the one that brought you in, how great was it to see the success he's having right now with the Nigerian national team? I know for our American listeners, it might have stung you. I know it was an exhibition game. Trust me, Canada has a lot of experience losing those games too, so I can relate there. But how great is it to see Mike Brown excelling and getting some recognition for his work with the national team?
No, it's really exciting. And, you know, I'm very, very happy for him. Shot him a text after the game. And I know he's excited about the opportunity. It's great to see him on the sideline again. Obviously he's had a lot of success in Golden State, but you know, really a classy guy and opened the door and for me to come into the NBA. And then I've had just a privilege of working for an incredible organization from top to bottom. And then you know, also, you know, in my time being able to be around some remarkable coaches, I've learned so much in my time being here. So really, really thankful for that.
Justin and I are no strangers to imposter syndrome. You're working with kids, right? And then all of a sudden you're on an NBA staff. Yeah. Like how did you approach that mentally? Was it, did you have some early trepidation about really challenging guys, or was it just, I'm in coach mode, coach, and this is how I do it?
Well, you know what? It was one of those things where I wasn't thrown right into the fire. Mm. Obviously I had a background in playing. I had a background in development for a couple of years with my own program. But I had an opportunity to come in and mentor, under some great people my first years, you know, Phil Handy was the director of player development, for 5 years while I was here, had the opportunity to learn a ton from him on court, along with some other incredible coaches along the way. So, you know, I was a sponge, you know, I was a sponge everywhere I went, whether it was in the film room, picking the brains of assistant coaches, whether it was on the floor, working with guys and just seeing that the way that the coaches, you know, connected with the players, the way they taught, watching their presence, just all those types of things in my first year. And then as I continued to move along and, you know, I think they saw my work ethic. I think they saw my approach and abilities. I was given responsibilities. And, you know, from that, I was prepared and ready to make an impact and help our guys.
With this being the offseason, one of the questions that I've always would have loved to have an answer to is kind of what goes into developing that offseason plan for a player. We know that a lot of the guys kind of came back to Cleveland after this season. They're working on that sort of thing. Do you kind of have a set idea when you're putting that kind of stuff together with them, how much collaboration is involved with that? Like, do they come to you asking about certain things they want to add to their game? Could you kind of walk us through that process and what that looks like?
Yeah, so for all of our players, you know, we put together an off-season development plan, and it's for each and every one of them. And, you know, I'm consulting everybody along the way. This isn't something that I just put together on my own and think that this is what I believe, because I believe that player development is an extension of your head coach. Mm. And so things that I may think are important, you know, JB might not see him playing in that type of role. So I seek that guidance and counsel from JB, from Kobe, as well as our assistant coaches. And we together put that program together. And we try and focus on a few things. You know, we don't want to overdo it and overcomplicate it and give them too many things to where they just come back and they've been working on everything. And, you know, they got a little bitter in certain areas. You know, we try and really focus and laser in on some of the ways that JB plans to use our players, and then catering a specific program for each individual. You know, from an on-court development plan to off-court, you know, all different areas, because we truly believe player development encompasses not only just your on-court development, but off the court as well.
We had Andrew Olson on to talk about, you know, the shooting specific part of the process, and we asked him this, and I'll ask you as well. You know, we have been lucky to see a lot of Cavs players come back to Cleveland for this offseason, but a lot of guys go off on their own and work with their own coaches. How does that jive for you? Because your incentives might be a little different than what their individual personal trainers' incentives might be. How do you kind of navigate that as a coach?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things to that. And one of them is, you know, depending on the individual, they could end up spending more time with their trainers than they do with us during an off season when you add it all together. So these trainers and coaches are extremely important to these players' development as well. So it's on us to make sure that, you know, we develop relationships with those guys and, you know, and relay the things that we're working on with our players and things that maybe they could add and implement into their workout. So, you know what, they're on the same page as us. And because at the end of the day, you know, we're both in it trying to see that individual improve, but at the same time, how can they help our team take those steps necessary and make sure that, that we're training in the right way? So that's one area. And then the other area is just, you know, a matter of, you know, getting these guys back in town with us and developing that relationship with them and helping make sure that they're on the same page as us too. Because for instance, one of our individuals we've been with this summer, when he went off, you know, I touched base with him and we put together, you know, a bunch of different drills and talked to him specifically on the things he should be working on. You know, I touched base with him after a couple of weeks, him being gone, and he was laser focused on those things. And he came back this week and you could see a big difference. If you could tell he'd been working.
What goes into determining kind of the work capacity for a player? Because I'd have to imagine like that's something that you're managing as well, right? Like trying to find that right balance between not overloading someone with too many things, making sure that their body is ready to handle that. What kind of goes into that process?
Yeah, so we have a great performance team and medical staff who has so much information, it blows my mind, you know, so. It's crazy when I walk into their offices and I see the numbers up on the screen and, you know, he starts to try and break them all down to me. And I say, well, just give me a couple of them. All right. No, I
can't. Probably looks like hieroglyphics at that point. Eh?
Yeah. Give me the PER.
This is above my level right here. So can he work today or can he not? But, you know, at the same time, you know, we try and be in tune and learn that stuff as well. And then there's that communication with those guys. They let us know when we need to back off. And they also will let us know when, hey, we can pick it up. And, you know, that will be with our medical team and as well as our strength and conditioning staff. We have incredible trainers in Derek Millender and Ed. And, you know, they work with us on putting the schedules together. And, you know, we try and work in unison. You know, on heavy days in the weight room, we try and back off in the court. And vice versa. So we're all kind of working as a unit to make sure that we don't overdo it, but at the same time that we're helping guys get better.
How challenging was this season compared to past ones? Because now, as you mentioned, you've been here for 8 years. Yeah. The schedule was nuts. Like it was absolutely insane. And the impressive thing when I look at the Cavs teams of the last couple of years is a lot of these guys have managed to get better during the season. Is that with managing this season and the schedule, was there adjustments you had to make to that approach? Like how much more challenging was it to get that player development during the year when there really isn't kind of the downtime to have those moments?
Yeah, I think you really did have to be creative and you had to really pick and choose your spots. When you looked at the schedule, I mean, there were months where, you know, there were so many back-to-backs, you know, when you saw an open day on the calendar, it was shocking. And you probably thought like, hey, these guys need to just get off of their legs. And then you'd find a 2 day break, you know, at some point and you figured, you know, maybe that first day would be a day where they could rest. And then you kind of circled that second one and said like, hey, like, this is a great opportunity, to get a little bit of extra work, and whatnot. But at the same time, like our development isn't just pre-practice, you know, our development is around the clock, whether it be through film sessions with our players, whether it be in our warm-up routine before the game, constantly talking about coverages and, hey, how are we going to attack Chicago's pick and roll defense? What do we need to be aware of from them on the way that they defend off-ball screens? You know, so the development is not only on the court, but it's in the film room. It's in just conversations on the side of the floor before the game. So, you know, we did have to be aware of how much they were doing and try to find ways to develop and teach without having to use their bodies.
It's funny to hear you kind of talk about, you know, how to attack Chicago in the pick and roll, because I think for a lot of fans who, like, I feel like there's like tiers of NBA understanding from casual fans like Justin and I. Like tier one, it like the bottom tier is like It's just all the head coach. That's like all you can focus on.
Organizations are ran by two people, the head coach and the GM. That's it. There's nothing else.
So that's like the bottom of the barrel, right? Like those are people, the casuals. Then you have people like Justin and I who are like maybe one tier above. Like, we know there's a staff, but we don't really know exactly how everything goes in. And it's funny because in my brain, in my dumb brain, I'm just thinking player development does player development. And the coaching and the head coach and his lead assistants do game prep and run practice. How much are those intertwined? Because it seems like they're very, very intertwined, where people might think they would be completely almost church and state.
No, you know what? When I think of coaching, I think development is part of it. You know, whether you're a lead assistant coach or you're in front of the bench, to whether your title says, you know, player development assistant or director of player development. We're all out on the floor with our guys, trying to help them get better and help them take those steps. So, you know, it's a complete team effort on the floor. We have a great staff who works extremely hard and puts in the time and, you know, the energy and focus, you know, to make sure that, you know, from a film standpoint or from a court standpoint, that, you know, we're prepared and we're not just walking onto the floor blindly. And so every time we step on the floor, we try and have a goal and objective on, you know, what we want to focus on, what we want to improve in. And, you know, another part of that is, you know, getting in tune with our players. And we talk to them a lot about, hey, we want you guys to be able to take ownership of this as well. What are things you guys are seeing? And so this isn't just a one-way dictator street. You know, we're listening to them and getting their feedback as well, so we can kind of put it all together.
How do you manage a situation where a player comes to you and says, hey, this is a facet of my game that we're not really using, or it's something that I want to develop and that's something I want to be part of my future, but it doesn't necessarily mesh with the team plan, kind of how you guys feel they're best utilized? How do you manage a situation like that?
Well, I think those types of situations are great opportunities for your off-season work. So when you go into that off season, if a player approached me and says, hey, I want to work on this, you know, coach isn't necessarily utilizing me in this area. Well, let's touch base with coach and let's see if that's a role that you can expand into. And if it is a role that you want to expand into, put the work into it. And let's see if you come back and you show progress and you prove that, hey, I can do that. So we never want to put guys necessarily, we don't want to put guys in boxes, you know. We have basketball players who can do a little bit of everything. But we also want to have individuals who are really darn good at certain things. And so, you know, you don't have not everybody can be LeBron and Kawhi and Luka and just impacted on every phase. And so part of a developing a great team is having roles and having specialists at times. And so we're trying to lock in on the things that they're great at and continue to improve on those. And then, you know, we're addressing some of their areas that they can improve in as well.
Have you ever had to have like one of those hard conversations where you go, hey, listen, I see that this is a part of a game you want to expand into, but like, we can't accommodate that right now. Like, you're not at the level we need to have, or is it always, you know, reframing and pushing them in a different direction?
Well, I think the key is, you know, always bringing things back to the team. And so in our development, we try not to make it about, you know, us individuals. It's like, hey, how can I help our team win games? Because at the end of the day, when you win, like, that's when people start to notice you. That's when you start to stand out. So, you know, when those types of things happen, you know, we'll have honest, real conversations. And, you know, they may have opportunities to attack in certain ways. You know, the ball just might not be in that player's hands for every pick and roll, you know, that they want, but they're going to see their pick and rolls. And then at the same time, like, hey, what are the areas for this game that you can impact? And then there's certain times when players go down and you're asked to take on more. So
did we have a season where you had a little bit of experience with that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about that. And guys were asked to play a lot of minutes. Guys were asked to do a lot, and you know, they rose to the challenge, and they competed their tails off to the end.
Yeah, it's always fun to see a player step up in that way. I mean, Dean Wade is one of the obvious stories of this season, the way that he filled in. My guy, Isaiah Hardendimes, stepping up there and providing so much playmaking with guys out. Like, that's the type of stuff that I really enjoy. Do you find that it's easier to build off of existing strengths with players or to kind of show them new stuff, new things that they can add to their game, and kind of improve different facets that aren't part of their game? Because it's interesting. Like, sometimes guys have strengths, but you have to kind of convince them to move away from that strength or make tweaks to that to better benefit their game. I mean, an obvious example is Sexton in his rookie year. He came in as a strong mid-range shooter, and as the season progressed, he started going away from one of his bread and butter
plays, zones,
to shoot more threes, which I think is remarkable and speaks to just the collective effort to get that done. But do you find that it's easier to kind of make those tweaks to existing strengths or to add a new facet to a player's game?
I think it might be easier to add on to the existing strengths. I don't think there's any denying that. Mm-hmm. One of the things that we try and do is how can we make them more efficient in their strengths? Colin was able to get to the mid range at will. You know, he could get to a spot and he loved that spot. But how can we make you more efficient to where we don't take away something that you're really good at and you're really comfortable at, but how can we find ways to sprinkle in some other things as well? Because you're an incredible scorer. How do we make you more dynamic so that you're not settling for the mid range jumper and you're putting pressure on the defense and getting to the paint for finishes, getting to the free throw line? And then how do we add, you know, a 3-point shot to your game from his rookie year? And, you know, now get defenses to start respecting you more and picking you up higher on the floor to now you can beat the first line of defense and now you can start making plays for your teammates. So, I think, you know, trying to just find ways to make some of our guys more efficient in certain areas. And at the same time, you know, it's a, you know, adding to, I don't even like to call them weaknesses, but just areas that they can improve in. I think that's always just a great challenge, you know, and it's something fun to do, because I think we're all competitive, players and coaches as well. So, we can do attack both areas.
How does that conversation with Colin go? Because Colin, I think, has one of the most stark changes in a shot chart from the first half of his season to the back half of his season that I've ever seen. Like, normally, like, guys who like those kind of jump shots don't want to change. Like, yeah. is it coming to him with shot charts? Is it just frank conversations about, hey, this is good, but here's where you can be better? Is it showing efficiency numbers? Like how do you sell a guy on making those kinds of changes?
It's a number of things, especially when you're really good at something, wanting to change something that is probably a big part of why you got there, can always have a little bit of resistance and be difficult. And at the same time, recognizing, especially like in Colin's situation, a rookie coming in, starting at point guard for most of the season. And, you know, there's so much thrown at you at a rookie season. You're just trying to hang on, right? And, but at one point during the season, I remember a turning point. And it was a shoot around day. And, you know, we went around the horn and we shot 5 shots at 5 spots. And he made 23 out of 25 threes on the circle. And I remember I held the basketball after. I was like, are you serious? And he looked at me and he was like, what? I was like, how are you going to make 23 out of 25 threes, but you're not going to shoot a 3 in the game? And he laughed. He's like, oh, man. I was like, no, you need to shoot a 3 tonight. He's like, all right. And so I can't remember if it was that night or it was a night, pretty close after that. But that was one of the instances where it was like, hey, just shoot it. We want you to shoot it. And you're really good at it. You're making 23 out of 25 right here. I would love for that to go into the game and for you to make 3 out of 5 in the game. And so, you know, those types of conversations, shot charts of, you know, some of the elite 3-point shooters in the league, elite guards, you know, just showing him, you know, how many they're attempting and, what it can add to his game. But he's super coachable and he loves challenges. And so, you know, it was, it was a challenge that was laid out there for him. And then you look at his rookie season and he breaks a record for 3-point makes, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And you look back on that and you're just, it's really rewarding and exciting to see a guy achieve great success.
It really does seem like you guys have a great crop of young players that are really receptive to work. Like, that's how it appears from the outside, because Colin, we've talked about the growth he's made. Darius has obviously made massive strides, and I assume working with Team USA is like that. And then Isaac Okoro, who came in with no summer league, no real prep, probably the toughest situations possible, and really stepped up, took the toughest defensive assignment while still working on his offensive game. Out of that group, like, is there one we've talked about, Colin, like, is there a player that really kind of surprised you? Like, you knew that coming in that they kind of had the reputation for having a strong work ethic, but when you saw it in person, really stood out?
Yeah, I think we have a ton of great workers. There's no denying that. And I think that's a big part of why our guys have continued to develop over the years. And that's why I think we're extremely optimistic about the future of this organization, is because we got the right guys who love basketball, love competing, and love working. And so in order to get better, it starts with the work. So we have some great ones. Isaac coming in this season is just a workhorse. You know, like, he just shows up and does it. And he doesn't ask any questions. He doesn't roll his eyes. He just gets on the floor and works and does whatever's asked of him. And obviously, I'm sure you guys were able to see that throughout the season with just him, you know, taking the challenges of guarding the best player every night.
Poor guy, man.
Was that right? And, you know, and just being so durable throughout the year and just never running from it. And, you know, his expression just never changed, you know, like, whether it was a great night for him defensively, whether it was a great night for him offensively, or a poor night, like, he came back and he was the same guy. He's really about the right things. And he has a great work ethic. We have him in town right now. And he's going to be a special talent, because he's got the abilities, he's got the talent, but he's also, you know, got the work ethic and mindset for it.
So a guy like Isaac, who has kind of the obvious, area of improvement, which is the 3-point jumper, like, that feels like, you know, the skeleton key that unlocks the rest of his game. Mm-hmm. Like, how much time are you spending this offseason thinking about, you know, or how much time are you spending working on that versus, expanding his overall game, which he started to flash some real signs of at the end of the year?
Yeah, it was interesting down the stretch. I think, with all the injuries, we didn't get to see it for a majority of the season, but I think he really turned some heads towards the end of the year with just some of his playmaking ability. Mm-hmm. And, he was one of those guys. I even remember watching him come out of college at Auburn. And I remember watching the film. And I said, this kid really knows how to make the right play. He seems very unselfish. He's more of just a straight line driver, drive and kick. He always seems the open guy. But I hadn't really seen him play out of the pick and roll. And that was something that we got to see him do a little bit at the end of the year. And he has great size. You know, he knows how to use his body. And he's got his eyes out for his teammates. So I think that's going to be, you know, a big part of his offseason program, is continuing to expand in his abilities to make plays for himself along with his teammates. And then the 3-point shot, I think – we saw it throughout the year. You guys had Andrew Olson on the show, who does an incredible job for us. And him, as well as our other coaches, Coach Buckner has spent great time with him on that 3-point shot. And he made some great strides. And you see him in the gym now, even today when I watch him, and it's just like, it's really, really coming along. And I think, he's gonna be there. He showed the strides and the improvement. And he's going to get where he wants to go. But he really showed that he's not only just a 3-and-D type player. I think he showed a lot of people that he has more to his game than that.
Yeah, we've been joking all season that his step back is a better looking shot than his spot up, because he's just in such good rhythm on those shots.
He loves that step back. He loves going left for that step back. And he makes sure to tell us about it, too. he makes one in the game, and then we sub him out of the game. He'll walk by. And he's interesting, man, because he's quiet, but his personality has just continued to blossom over the year. And even when he walks in the gym now and you say what's up to him, it's just like you get to really just see who he is. And he's a lot of fun to be around. But when he'd come out of those games, it was almost like he'd give you a little wink when he made that that step back three. Even if it was a bank, he'd probably still give you that wink like he meant to do it.
You're getting me all worked up because I'm an optimist at heart, and like when I see like the progress that these guys make and just the stories of their work ethic, it really does get me excited. The other aspect of his game that I really feel like could open up a lot for him is improving that handle, making sure that he has more control. He's going to be better equipped to probe the defense and find those open teammates. But one of the notions that I guess is kind of common, it's one of the things that we hear, is that developing the handle is one of the tougher things to do. Do you agree with that assessment, that it's more difficult than other aspects of their game? Or is that something that if you put the hours in, you can really make those meaningful strides?
So I think you can definitely make the meaningful strides. There's no doubt about that. Ball handling is something that you can learn. Some people are better at it because they have that quick first step, or they have that burst where they can use that handle, get a defense off balance, and beat the defender to the rim, get to the paint. Some guys, on the other hand, don't have that, you know, elite athleticism. So while their handle might be tight, their escaping ability isn't as good. So you can definitely improve in that area. Some guys are handling the rock more and are asked to, you know, create and break down defenders off the dribble. And we have some really good ones. I think Darius is as good as they come in the league at handling the rock. He's herky jerky. He's got great speed, change of speeds, and his ability to shoot and pass off the dribble is really good. And I think Isaac has been already working on it. He spent time throughout the year, and we've been spending time on breakdown moves, as well as just, you know, just certain drills just to get the handle tighter and crisper.
I know we've asked like 9 questions about Isaac in a row, but he is such an interesting candidate from a development perspective. You know, I remember at the beginning of the year, you know, everyone knew that the jumper was going to be a work in progress. And my first thought was he's going to have to play exclusively at the three because the jumper's not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you look at a game like the Phoenix game, when he's playing a little bit more at the two and he's just bullying these smaller guards on the way to the rim. Like, do you feel like you learned something about his ability to kind of play that position, and kind of like, where do you think he's best suited offensively? Cause you know, archetype wise, you go, he's a three and there's nothing else, but like you see him at the two and that physicality really starts to shine.
About it. He definitely has versatility throughout the year. I think he has the ability to play both positions. You know, I think he even has the ability to bring the ball down the floor, as we saw this year, and initiate the offense at times. I think there, I wouldn't even be able to put him in a box. I think depending on, you know, what the needs are for our team and our roster, I think he can, depending on a game, you know, be mixed in at all three positions if he had to be. So, I think that's a luxury when you can find a guy that's able to do those things.
And it's something the team needs, right? Like, it's something that, you know, all good teams are versatile and switchy and flexible and can play guys in a lot of different spaces. So I was just very encouraged to kind of see that from him this year.
Yeah, and it's not just on the offensive end, but it applies to the defensive end, like you said. That defensive versatility is really, really important, and he provides the versatility on both sides of the floor.
From an offensive philosophy standpoint, I like there's a lot of variety, I find. Like, you're starting to see more variety in the league right now. There's some teams that kind of run the heliocentric offense where it's, all right, we got one ball-dominant guy, we got shooting around,
and we got pick spacing. And roll people to death.
Yeah, we'll pick and roll people to death. Do you have any preference towards a certain style? Is it based off of just personnel? Or if you had your kind of ideal roster to work with, would you prefer to to have a lot of ball handlers, because Cleveland has a really interesting opportunity where you have two dynamic guards in Garland and Sexton. Isaac has shown strengths as a playmaker. Larry can play make from the forward position, same with Kevin. And you look at the guys in this draft, high up in the draft, they bring that to the table as well. Do you kind of have a preferred style when you're kind of looking at your ideal version of basketball?
I think you know, the style, obviously, like my ideal style is, you know, having guys that are able to make plays, you know, but at the same time, you know, you're trying to develop a, you know, a team that has a roster that is well balanced. And mm-hmm. so I think it all just kind of depends. I think you hear a lot of head coaches that'll say, you know, like, hey, I had intention to play in this style coming in, but once I was able to get around this team, I realized that we had to kind of shift gears to do that. But I think in today's game, you do see that there's a lot of interchangeable parts on the really good teams, you know, and then they also have a lot of people that can create shots and make plays. And I think we have guys that have shown that they're able to do that and are continuing to get better at it year to year. And so I think we have a team assembled to kind of take those steps like some of these great teams in the league.
So the Cavs offense struggled this year at times. There were stretches where, and obviously a lot of them were due to injuries at, you know, entire position groups being wiped out, which is bananas. But what do you think the road is this team moving into that, you know, the above league average on offense? Is it just more reps? Is it conditioning? I joked all year that the number one thing this team needs to do is get older, just because, like, there's just a bunch of 21-year-olds, and that's, you know, you don't have a lot of history of, like, great success with 21-year-olds early on. You gotta let them season. But, like, what do you think the roadmap is to this offense really starting to blossom?
I think it's, you know, I think it starts, and we've kind of laughed about it, but it is getting a healthy roster out on the floor, because I think when we did have our players out there and we were at full strength, I think we showed, you know, the ability to have, you know, a very good offense. And there was a lot of times throughout this season where guys were asked to play different positions. Guys were asked to carry really heavy loads. And so, you know, I'm very biased in this, but I do believe it just starts with a healthy roster. And, you know, I feel like I did see it this year. And, you know, having everybody in their natural position, having guys in their roles, I think, you know, we're going to be a very good ball club when we can get that.
And it was funny, because I believe April, when Kevin was back, Darius was healthy, Collins there, like, the offense shot up, the three-point attempts went up. This was a team that was finally taking, like, league average amount of threes, so a lot of it did seem like it was personnel. And then part of it also appeared to be growth and maturity. Like, Darius started taking more threes, and it seemed like a light bulb was starting to click that, hey, if I'm a little more aggressive getting my shot, it's going to make it easier for me to create for other players. What do you think the Team USA experience is going to do for him? Because obviously he's around guys. Jeff made a great point on our last podcast about Damian Lillard being in his ear saying, hey, you got to take a three here. You got to take that shot. What do you think that experience could do for his player development?
I think it's going to be big. I think it's going to be, you know, big for his individual development. I think it's going to be big for our team development. You know, to have the opportunity to go and be around those players and kind of just watch the way that they approach the game, watch the way that some of these lead guards lead a team and attack and prepare is invaluable. So I truly believe it's going to be really big for him. And the hope is that he's going to come back, you know, and apply that to making us better as a team. But Darius is, he's just an awesome person. He's an extremely gifted basketball player. And I think we saw that along the way. And I think that speaks volumes to them selecting him for that team to come be a part of that experience. But he really did show huge strides throughout the season. And I always kind of go back to that San Antonio game that we were on the road, and I think he maybe had
30. Justin watches it 3 or 4 times a week. So
it's a fun one to watch. Yeah, I might throw on YouTube after this, but it really is. I mean, it was a really special game. And, you know, I believe he was like maybe 5 for 10 from the 3-point line. And, you know, you just saw like how he could get it in so many different ways, whether it was off the dribble, whether it was catch and shoot, whether it was dropping dimes and making plays for his teammate. I think that was really a breakthrough game for him to win against an experienced veteran team on the road. And it just seemed like his confidence just continued to skyrocket through the end of the season. And, you know, I've been around him in this offseason, and I think he's focused and knows what he has to do to take those next steps, because he's a big part of this.
So coaching is, in a lot of ways, it's a bit of a thankless profession, right? Like, you know, no one's going to, after a player goes off for a big performance, no one's going to be like, oh, they must have coached him up. Like, you know, mostly the players get a lot of credit, and, you know, they're the ones doing it. And, you know, I told Andrew this when we podcasted with him, but this is my first year professionally, like, managing people, and it's a little weird to take wins, right? Like, because it's their success, but so it's like, how much was I a part of it? So the reason I ask this is a long way of saying, what's something that you're really proud of that you feel like you directly contributed to, whether it's a player's individual skill set developing, the way the team attacked a certain problem? Like, what's a coaching moment in your career that you take a lot of pride in?
Well, I think back, you know, there's a number of things, and you did say it's a thankless job, and at the same time, you know, our guys are very appreciative. I mean, it might not be out in the media, but our guys are very grateful for the things that we do to help them, whether it be on and off the floor. But you know, there's a few things that stick out to me. You know, Jetty Osmond, I remember when he came into the NBA. I remember meeting him in Santa Barbara, and he had come in, and I just remember the first time I was in the gym with him. He was just this young kid, and he was just had this joy, and it was just like his eyes were just like wide open to like this experience. You know, his first year, he's walking into the NBA with LeBron James and Kevin Love, and you know, this whole experience for him. So, you know, it was really neat to kind of see him go from that young kid and watching him work his tail off that rookie season. And he made the most of his opportunities. He got some opportunities and he did great with them. But just kind of watching his, you know, development, seeing him, you know, be able to assign a great contract with our team, and just be able to know that, you know, the hard work that he put in didn't go unnoticed, and he took those strides. Another one is just, you know, is Colin, and watching his development. I've been with him since he came into the NBA, and I see how committed he is in the game. I see his passion to be not good, but to be great. And he never settles for mediocrity. I saw that today in the gym when I shot with him, and he told me the number he wanted to get, and he on a drill, and he ended up getting 2 better than it. And I'll just say it was a ridiculous percentage that he shot on it.
Come on, Mike. Can you tell us?
It was just, you know, his eyes. I'll just tell you this. His eyes were just laser focused. And this is, I'm telling you guys, like this puts it in perspective. This is the off season, and this is July on just a random day shooting. But this guy wanted to win that drill so bad, and he got 2 above his number that he was going for. So, you know, just seeing the things that he did and seeing how he's expanded his game. And the year that he had last year is just it's phenomenal. And he's truly just expanded and added parts to his game each and every year. And that's been a privilege to watch. But, I mean, the list goes on and on. You know, you watch Dean Wade and what he did. You watch Lamar Stevens get opportunities. There's just I could go on and on about it. But it's really cool to see guys, you know, achieve success from hard work.
It is really cool. And like, that's what I love about teams that are working their way back to the playoffs and getting these young players and just seeing their growth. Like, to me, I just love the process. Like, I love the game, and it's so much fun to see that development. So to get these insights behind the scene is really, really cool. Before we wrap this up, I do have to ask you, how excited are you to work with whoever's coming in with the number three pick, because you guys have done terrific work with a lot of these other lottery picks and with guys like Dean Wade and Lamar. How excited are you to work with one of the talents in what is considered a really strong draft?
Yeah, we're extremely excited. You know, the draft lottery was a really fun night. I had my kids down in the family room with me, and I was trying to explain the odds to them and how it all worked. They're 7-4, so they didn't completely grasp it. But I just told them, I said, we want to be the last one called. and so, you know, we watched that. And so that was a fun night to see where we landed. And, you know, everything I hear and everything I watch and see, it's a great draft class, and all the teams in the league are going to get special players. But we've had a blast working with the guys we've had, and we look forward to whatever's next.
I'm looking forward to it too. Thank you so much for coming on with us. We really do appreciate your time. I want to thank all our listeners as well for supporting us. If you're listening via podcast, make sure you leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cats.